And interestingly, we found a pattern. Probably we'll need more studies to confirm this, but we found a pattern. The first pattern is that the PCB4 replicating the germinal centers, exactly the same thing that PCB2 does. When you look at PCB3, the virus normally replicate on those inflammatory cells, the perivascular inflammation that we keep mentioning. So this is a totally different. It looks more like PCB2 than PCB3. That's the first thing. Okay, so now we have this lymphoid lesion, which clinically what it means, we don't know. Perhaps just a small or slight immune depression that exacerbates other things. That can happen. So what else? Where else can we find it? So we start labeling other tissues, and we found out that the virus replicate on the lamina propria of the intestine when the intestine has inflammation. Example, cases with Lawsonia.
Welcome to the Swine Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest swine health research digested for you.
Through innovative solutions, cutting-edge research, and world-class experts, Boehringer Ingelheim helps producers operate with complete confidence. Learn more at bi-animalhealth.com. Get your full value from start to finish with Elanco. Farm Health Guardian, digital technology for better biosecurity.
Welcome to the Swine Health Black Belt Podcast, the latest swine health research digested for you. My name is Dr. Clayton Johnston, and I'm the host of the podcast. Joining me in our illustrious podcast studios for this week's recording is Dr. Pablo Pinheiro. Dr. Pinheiro is an associate professor and diagnostic pathologist at Iowa State University's Veterinary Diagnostic Lab. Dr. Pablo, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you've been on before, but and certainly many people have worked with you and sent you tissues. But just in case there's some folks out there that haven't interacted with you, why don't you start with a little introduction for the audience?
Okay, great. Thank you, Clayton. Thank you for inviting me again. I mean, it's a pleasure being on the podcast with you again. We had a really nice chat last time. I hope we do the same today. So as you mentioned, I'm associate professor at Iowa State Diagnostic Lab. Mostly before I joined the lab, I did a PhD in molecular biology related with PERS and PCB2 back in Virginia and did my pathology training there. Pathology residency. Before that, I working in Argentina as a swine practitioner, kind of mixing academia and practice. I was an independent swine practitioner and working in the academia, basically teaching pathology there. So that's kind of my journey that led me here to Iowa State.
Salmonella presents significant challenges to pig health and performance and poses food safety risks to humans. As the first and only vaccine offering live attenuated strains of both Salmonella cholera suis and Typhimurium, Enterosol Salmonella TC from Boehringer Ingelheim protects pigs against both serotypes with a single oral dose. Talk to your Boehringer Ingelheim representative to learn more.
Well, and at your time at Iowa State, you have developed some notoriety for your understanding of circovirus-related disease. And I've caveated that, or I've introduced it as circovirus-related disease without, you know, saying specifically PCV2 or PCV3 or now even PCV4, because it's certainly an emerging topic of discussion. Pablo, PCV4 is kind of where we want to start today. You want to give us a bit of a broad overview of PCV4, right? How did we find it? How close is it to PCV3, PCV2? What do you know about it, and what are we starting to understand with PCV4?
So this is really interesting. So PCV4 has been described probably 2019, so about 5 years ago. The first description was in China. So and from there is a couple of reports in Asian countries, Vietnam, Thailand, and so on. So we kind of been neglecting to study PCV4 here in the United States. And the same thing that happened when we described PCV3. So interestingly, one of my students, Dr. Molly Kroger, she went to do a scholarship in Thailand. And she said, I want to have a project. What can I do? So she developed this multiplex PCR, PCV2, PCV3, and PCV4. So she went to Thailand, did this project, and surprisingly, she found multiple co-infections. So she came back to Ames and said, you know what? I want to do the same thing here. No, please don't do it. Well, yep, she did. And surprisingly, we basically run, you know, we went to a fishing exploration. We started grabbing samples with not a specific clinical disease from the diagnostic lab. So she broke up this study doing 100 lung, 100 feces, 100 spleen, 100 serum, 100 lymphoid tissues, including lymphonodes and tonsils, and 100 fetuses. Done. Also, okay, run your multiplex PCR. So at the time that we were doing this, the Swine Health Information Center learned that we were doing this kind of evaluation, and they were really, really helpful because they support, you know, there's a lot of testing involved here, so they fully support this project. So we really are thankful for that. So we run all these PCRs, and there you go. PCV4 was in a lot of different sample types. So we found it in lung, we found it in feces, spleen, serum, lymphoid tissue, but not in fetuses. I'm going to highlight that one. So a couple of reports here and there describe PCV4 as a cause of abortion. Well, it was detected in fetuses, but doesn't mean that caused abortion. So here we got 100 samples and nothing. Yes, we found PCV2, we found PCV3. But no PCV4. So that's the first difference, perhaps, with our report, with other reports around the world. So, but, you know, we went a little farther. I said, I told Molly, you know, there's enough cases or reports out there that describe detection, but no one really linked this to make a cause association. There is no lesions described. There is no clinical signs. We put together a summary of, I don't know, 50, 60 papers, and the clinical descriptions around the go all over the place, from abortion, lameness, neurological signs. So you imagine, but nothing really connecting causation. So we need to do something else. The PCR and the sequencing, you know, the whole describing the virus is not gonna help. So it's there, and people is gonna still questioning, and so what? So we need to do something else. So what she did is she developed an RNA scope. So now, with this tool in hand, we are able to see the virus within the lesions. And because, as I said at the beginning, we didn't have an agenda. We didn't look for any specific clinical signs. Let's just label every single one and see what we found. So now we have all this slide here with PCV4 lighting up in tissues. And interestingly, we found a pattern. Probably we'll need more studies to confirm this, but we found a pattern. The first pattern is that the PCV4 replicates in the germinal centers. Exactly the same thing that PCV2 does. When you look at PCV3, the virus normally replicates on those inflammatory cells, the perivascular inflammation that we keep mentioning. So this is a totally different. It looks more like PCV2 than PCV3. That's the first thing. Okay, so now we have this lymphoid lesion, which clinically what it means, we don't know. Perhaps just a small or slight immune depression that exacerbates other things. That can happen. So what else? Where else can we find it? So we start labeling other tissues, and we found out that the virus replicate on the lamina propria of the intestine when the intestine has inflammation. Example, cases with Lawsonia. So we found PCV4 replicating in the lamina propria. Is the inflammation induced by Lawsonia what exacerbates PCV4 replication? Is something that we don't know. It's really hard to speculate all the way around that PCV4 is going to predispose to this bacterial infection. It's kind of crazy. But certainly the virus is in there. Where there is more inflammation, the virus is easily to find. So that's kind of the story we have here. We still don't know clinically what it means, but certainly there is now, we know that it's not just merely a detection, that the virus caused some sort of inflammatory process and some sort of perhaps depletion.
With the initial identification of the pathogen, Pablo, I would presume that was maybe a next generation sequencing effort that identified that in kind of a case with generic clinical signs. Is that correct? Could you talk a little bit basically, is this a situation like with PCV3 where we're identifying a virus that when we look at historical samples, it's been there for a long, long time, or do we have any evidence that it is an emerging pathogen that has changed its genotype in some way, shape, or form, and now is being identified because it's truly there more often now?
No, I think that is the same pattern for with PCV3. It's exactly the same pattern. The virus has been there. It's not something new. It's not a change in either of the other PCBs, 1, 2, or 3. It's not a change. I think that the virus has been there for a long time. Even the current studies out there show, you know, specific genetic changes that allow you to classify the virus. At the end of the day, for us as clinicians, it doesn't mean much. It doesn't mean that we have a different phenotype. It's the same presentation. So at this point, the classification, it doesn't really help us to do anything clinically. It's PCV4 there, and that's all it is.
Have you done enough sequencing either with the Thailand samples and or the U.S. samples to understand the genetic diversity within the PCV4s in pigs? Is it highly diverse and there are lots of different populations or pretty conserved?
No, it's a really conserved. In this study, we got two full sequences. We compare with the ones that are available, which are not a lot. There's not a ton. So ours is close to one that was described in Spain in wild boars. So to make an idea, it's like a 98.9% similar to the one in Spain. And there is also close similarity with the one in South Korea and Thailand, 97-98%, somewhere there. But it doesn't indicate that we have a totally different virus from the one that is circulating around the world. It's about the same thing.
Yeah, that's certainly good to hear. If we do need a vaccine in the future state, you know, that's wonderful that it's a fairly conserved genotype. And maybe we don't need 20 vaccines. If we've got to have a vaccine, one would be broadly protective.
Yeah, and again, you know, the same concept of PCV3 is the real question is, do we really need a vaccine at this point? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's a question. The question is to really understand the clinical impact. So we know that there is this inflammatory background. Is really clinically relevant? If it's not, probably we don't even know about it. We need a vaccine.
So if there's a producer out there or a veterinarian out there, Pablo, who's hearing this and saying, my pig farm's just not acting right? I want to explore, is PCV4 potentially a problem here? Is the PCR commercially offered at Iowa State? And how about the RNA scope that you mentioned? Are those tests that we can get done?
Yes, they're currently up and running in Iowa State. We have a PCR. I don't know yet. I probably need to talk this with the molecular department if the plan is to combine and have a 2, 3, 4 or something that I don't know. It's in my wishing list. Yes, it is. But the one that I mentioned was a research developed. So now it needs to be moved to the streamline and things change there. So I know that we have the PCV4, standalone PCV4 is there, but I don't know if it is a plan to multiplex. That's that. For the RNA scope, it's up and running, it's validated, so we have it. If you ask me what tissue, perhaps, you are interested.
What sample should we send you?
Yeah, I would think that based on the experience we have, lymph nodes were the more rewarding.
Okay.
Lymph nodes were the ones that we found lower CTs, and we were able to see the virus replicating in those tissues. It doesn't mean that you cannot. We found it in lung, we found it in feces, so you can use those other sample matrices. I know that tomorrow people are going to run and do oral fluids. We know that.
Sure.
And I won't be able to help to do any interpretation on that.
Yeah,
we need to, you know.
Safe to say, if you do oral fluids, you'll probably find it. Same thing with fluids, right? We expect that it's an endemic pathogen, and don't get too excited if you find infected pigs, because that doesn't mean anything has changed.
So that's where we are. I mean, we generate quite a bit of information in a really short period of time. I think that they still need a lot to learn. So is there? We need to learn more how to first understand the clinical impact. Secondly, how to do interpretation of the results, the laboratory results. Those things are really important, and they need to be more more research on that area, I guess.
Very important work, Pablo, and I can't thank you and your team enough for doing the work. Circovirus is a sensitive topic for the pig industry, right? We've had tough experiences with PCV2, and we thank our partners at the diagnostic labs and the pharmaceutical companies for coming up with solutions to that. But we also thank you for continuing to monitor, you know, new evolving diseases like potentially PCV4. Tremendous work, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing that knowledge with our audience.
All right, thank you so much. Thank you, Biden.
Well, and to our audience, thank you for being a part of this. Please like and subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If you found this informational, or maybe you know somebody that's interested in circovirus, send them this episode. Let them hear Pablo's words of wisdom to hopefully help them to further explore their situation on their farm. For Dr. Pablo Pinheiro, I'm Dr. Clayton Johnson. Thank you so much for joining us, and please have a great rest of your day.